My new book, Facts That Aren't True, is out now. Don't forget about my other book, Rational Answers to Stupid Questions. Click the link in the description now. So in terms of like arguments for atheism, so you don't think that when people like produce like the maybe like the problem of evil, you don't think that's an argument for atheism. You just think that's an argument against maybe like a perfect God or something.
Yeah, I think that only go against the classical version of Christianity, because even if we looked at Christianity specifically, you can be an open theist with some sort of limitations that would allow for the problem of evil. And if you wanted to exclude Christianity, we could say that there's some sort of limited God out there, that they're the highest form of power that could possibly be achieved or logically be achieved, that it cannot exceed that, but it kind of hits that limit, and that limit allows for the possibilities of evil.
Okay, yeah, sure. Like, do you, like... you know, as a theist, are you one of these people that thinks like the Christian God is the only kind of God that can exist?
Yeah, so I think a Christian God is necessary.
Oh, okay. Well, then wouldn't an argument against the, like, because that's a little bit weird, because I feel it's kind of weird from your perspective to say, well, you know, the argument against the perfect, like, problem of evil or whatever wouldn't prove that some other kind of God exists when you do believe that the God you believe in is the necessary one. So there isn't like an option B, you know?
Yeah, I agree. There is no option B. But because of my worldview is that this is the option, this is the necessary being. If you were to debunk my worldview, I'm not going to revert to atheism, because all you've shown is that my worldview is collapsed, right? So that necessary being is out the window. I can now collapse to another worldview, and that other worldview could be this limited God.
Okay. That's a little weird to me, because it sounds like you're starting with like a true dichotomy, either my God or there is no other God. Yeah, but then saying like you'd be willing to like change your mind. But it's not like there's something wrong with being willing to change your mind.
No. So I think you misunderstand. So what I'm saying is, yes, okay, I do believe my God is necessary. I believe that's the way that it has to be. But let's say that you came up with an argument that did change my mind, that convinced me that my God isn't necessary. I'm not going to revert to atheism based off of that. I'm just now going to be convinced that my God is no longer necessary. And so I can now go to other logical conclusions, for example, like a deistic type God, or I can go into what's it called? Pantheism or something like that. So yeah, there are other options that are on the table. I don't have to revert to atheism because you've disproved my idea of God.
Okay. Okay. That's totally fine. That's kind of why I like your streams, because you always seem like a pretty leveled and reasonable person. So
thank you.
That's all kind of cool. I wonder if we could just talk about the problem of evil for a little bit. I had a debate on Modern Day Debate like 6 weeks ago or something like that, and we kind of went over this. And the guys I was talking to, one of them, he just rambled incoherently, and the other guy didn't
Jim
really.
Bob?
No, not that. It was the one guy's name was Travis and the other guy's name was Apollos something.
No, I never heard of him.
Yeah. He was a cool dude. He was a smart dude. He had a lot of notes, but so I just kind of have some bullet points, so this may sound a little bit clunky, but I'll just try to run through some things and you can interrupt me whenever you want. But
yeah, go for it.
Normally when people talk about the problem of evil, from my perspective, what I think they kind of get wrong is they talk about humans doing terrible things to other humans, and you guys have a response to that, which is like, we live in a fallen state and people have free will to like inflict misery, you know, which is a decent response. But I think that there's more ways to approach the problem of evil that I think are really problematic, which is that in terms of it being evidence for atheism, one of the things about the majority of suffering we experience, like getting diseases or an asteroid hitting the earth and causing billions of deaths or a wildfire.
One second.
Oh, yeah. So all of these like random acts of nature, basically, that cause these horrendous sufferings, they're all like impersonal forces. Mm-hmm. Now, under naturalism, atheism, whatever you want to call it, I mean, we would expect that. It's literally how life is shaped on this planet. Extinctions are, and the struggle with nature is part of the evolutionary process. Under naturalism, I think you'd kind of expect that. But under theism, I feel like there really isn't a lot of room for impersonal forces, because it's all unfolds according to God's divine will or plan or whatever. So I think you'd have to be committed to the idea that God desired or thought it would be good that a cosmic ray would give somebody cancer, for example. So before, right, like going on and on and on, I'll let you respond to that.
Yeah, so that just starts off the premise that you think that the theist has to hold the position that all evils are necessary to some sort of degree. Do you hold that?
That they're necessary? Well, I don't know if they're necessary, but...
From the theist perspective.
They wouldn't have to be necessary, but God can choose for them to not exist, and it would seem that this God would want them to exist, because I don't know why God would sit back and... allow natural forces to do whatever it is they do without his intention or foresight.
So you're making a probabilistic argument then rather than a logical argument. So do you agree that there is no logical inconsistency in evil and an all-loving God?
Well, two things. I would say, yeah, I never thought about it this way, but I would probably couch it as more probabilistic. But the second thing was, I don't see a logical inconsistency between evil existing, or say it again.
So most people, when they bring up the problem of evil, they start on the logical problem of evil, where they basically say that you cannot logically have an all-loving God and the problem of suffering or animal suffering or the problem of evil. And so they say it's a contradiction, so it doesn't work. That's a different argument than if you're saying it's a probabilistic, which is the evidential problem of evil, where you're saying it seems to be due to all these evil things that it's less likely that a God exists because it's more probable and expected under naturalism.
Yeah, well, I would say it's, I don't think it poses any logical problem for naturalism, but I think that it does pose a problem under theism, or like the
logical or evidential one.
Well, I would say logical, and I would say what I'm doing is I'm looking at the way things are and evidentially saying, saying one's more likely than the other.
Okay, so that's an easy one then. So the logical problem of evil is basically stated from like my perspective. It's called a defeater argument. It basically states that at the end, God is going to defeat all evil to the point where all beings will retroactively look upon the suffering that they've gone through and consent to going through it. Very similar to when we look upon our own lives and we say, yeah, those things were terrible, didn't need to happen, but I wouldn't change my life.
But doesn't that make the suffering pointless?
It is pointless.
So how do you reconcile a perfect being inflicting or allowing for pointless suffering?
Because they will defeat it. They will ultimately destroy it and not so much like reward us, but put us in a state of being where we consent to us going through it.
So then, but it's completely possible that God would, you know, defeat, because like you can say there's evil or wrong in the world. Not all forms of evil and wrong are suffering. So I don't see how the world of like misery and suffering that some, you know, conscious beings endure, like humans and animals and whatever, would in any way need to happen just because there's going to be, you know, retribution down the road. Why not allow any of that and then still conquer evil, you know, in the end?
Yeah, so now you're kind of shifting into the evidential, where we're weighing the cases, we're weighing the probabilities. So do you concede that like the logical, we're good with that? There's no logical contradictions?
I still kind of think it is, because I mean, you just said that there is pointless suffering, and I don't see how the redemption, who knows? Like it could literally be trillions of years down the road. We just have absolutely no idea. It in any way deals with the fact that the pointless suffering ever occurred.
So can you say that again?
So you said ultimately there's this redemptive piece to right. Where all the suffering that occurs is negated, or it's like it becomes kind of meaningless, right?
No, you consent to it. Not that it becomes meaningless. It becomes one of those things where you look upon it and you're like, I consent to the suffering I went through. Very similar to like the analogy I said before, where it's like, okay, I've suffered in my life. I wouldn't change my life, right? It's made me who I am, or so to speak.
So in the end, we'll all accept the suffering that occurred because of the redemption, and that evil will be conquered eventually.
The evil's conquered, the evil's destroyed. We move into new beings, new creation. The analogy that was given to me that I think works really well is, look, if you look at a mosaic, like you look at a glass figure, a glass, what do you call it?
Mosaic. Like stained glass?
Yeah, like stained glass, yeah. So you have like stained glass. If you zoom in on an individual piece, it's just a broken glass. It doesn't make any sense. It's like, oh, that's horrible, that's terrible. But when you zoom away from that broken piece and you see all those broken pieces put together, you have this beautiful image, this redemptive arc that comes from it.
I don't really like that analogy from your perspective, because that individual broken piece is a necessary part of the whole. And then you'd have to be saying that God deems all this suffering necessary, which I think you'd have to say that God desires for it to happen. But I don't see. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say it doesn't have to be necessary, because a broken piece could be another form, could be another broken piece, could be in line broken piece. It's just when it's all put together, you get this redemptive arc. So it's not the fact that it was designed to be that way; it's that it was put together, even though it was that way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. And maybe we're just looking at this so differently that I can't understand what you're saying, and you can't understand what I'm saying, but it's just God could have created a world where that kind of suffering doesn't happen, and Jesus still comes back in the end, and evil is conquered or whatever. Or he could have created this world with all this suffering, and he did create the world that from point A to point B, the journey is kind of miserable, and that just wasn't necessary, but it just seems like God desired to do it that way. And I just find it to be a weird commitment you have to make, that God wanted things to play out in that way.
Sure. Yeah, that's fine, but that's a different argument. That's an evidential argument again. So I want to make sure that we've gotten through the logical argument before we move to an evidential argument. And so what I'm showing is that there is no P and not P in my worldview, unless you can point at the contradiction.
Well, I guess the general contradiction is people would say that they don't see how an omnibenevolent God would create or cause or desire for pointless suffering to occur, but pointless suffering does occur according to God's design and I guess plan for us. So where's the reconciliation in that?
Yeah, the reconciliation is in the defeating of the evil that you would have gone through, the absolute destruction and destroying of it. Justice, that's the definition of justice, is something does you harm, and then that harm that fell upon you faces justice. It faces trial, it faces execution, it faces destruction, things like this. This, by definition, is redemption.
Yeah, I would a million times rather not having to seek justice than granted the opportunity to seek justice.
Sure. Yeah, that's fine. I agree with you there. But again, what I'm just
I feel like I'm beating a dead horse. Your argument agrees. Yeah, go ahead.
I feel like I'm kind of beating a dead horse, because what I'm making a case for is showing that there is no logical inconsistency. Because what my worldview is consistent. This is something that you would expect to see from an all-loving, all-just God, is a defeating of evil. Now, you're saying evidentially he could have done it a different way, so therefore it's less likely that he's real. And that's fine. We can get into that argument. But nonetheless, there is no P and not P. My worldview stays consistent. And we can make the argument. We can do it like a Bayesian approach, and we could say, hey, because of all these evils, it doesn't seem likely that this God can exist. And I could say, sure, and then we can start weighing that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We might literally just keep making the same arguments and not understanding each other. So, I mean, I'm going to keep talking about the problem of evil, but like in different ways. Again, like I said earlier, I think people can point to like, well, why does God allow for, you know, humans to commit terrible acts on each other? And the response is free will, and that's fine or whatever. But what I think is a problem is that God commands things that he knows will lead to suffering. And I don't know, maybe your answer to this is going to be like the exact same. But like, for example, we know today, I don't know what the number is. It's not that many, but like, I think a couple hundred kids every year die from infections from getting their circumcision. Well, I mean, thousands of years ago, when the Israelites were supposedly doing this, those numbers would have been astronomically higher. But God said that this is a covenant that he needs the Israelites to form with him. So he desired for that to happen. And the pain and misery to those child and the families and all of that, I don't understand how, again, it's the exact same thing. How can a perfect being do that to people?
Yeah, so now you're making the argument that God commands something that is like harmful, does bad to people, so therefore he's not good.
Yeah, like, but I would again call it a different kind of pointless suffering.
Yeah, well, I concede that there is pointless suffering, so we're on the same page there.
Well, this is definitely directly caused by God. I mean, some people, yep, like they'll point to humans as doing it. Some people have this view that like natural disasters aren't literally caused by God, so those don't count. But this is an example of him directly doing that, and mm-hmm, I don't see how an omnibenevolent being, okay, could do that. I think that's a logical problem.
First question I have to ask is basically, because you're saying obviously this would cause more damage in the past, are you aware of like what the data would have been if, you know, they didn't do it? Like, are you aware maybe it's possible that they would have had more infections or sexually transmitted infections or things like that, or uncleanliness or thing, those types of areas? Or like, are you aware of the data that would have happened?
I've looked into the only research I'm aware of, and this is extremely ironic, about circumcised versus uncircumcised general health outcomes is, and we have no idea why this is, but uncircumcised homosexual men tend to get STDs less often. So based on the rest of what's in the Bible, I don't think that's why God was telling us to circumcise our children. But no, I've never seen any literature that says circumcisions pose any other beneficial health outcome.
So you don't think that there's like a fact of like living in a culture that is completely unaware of like sexually transmitted infections, sexually transmitted diseases, those types of things, there wouldn't be any sort of effect? Is that the claim you're making?
Well, I don't know of any medical data that says that, but even if there was, then why on earth not just God created humans, it was up to him the way we would be designed, why on earth just make us be born with, I can't believe we're talking about foreskin, I hope we don't get shut down, why on earth just not have humans be born without it?
Yeah, that's the same argument as like, why on earth not just make humans be born with the inability to get cancer, right? So any sort of state of nature that we're in that causes suffering, you're just saying is causing a problem.
Well, I think it's pretty much fair to say that cancer isn't God's fault necessarily. You can make the argument that it is, circumcision.
Could God have created us as beings that would not be able to receive cancer?
I guess it's possible, yeah. But he's not, but at the same time, it's not God's, it's kind of like a trolley, well, I don't want to talk about the trolley problem, but God's not causing the cancer. In this case, God is causing the deaths of those children via infection because he's giving them this covenant that they have to obey.
Okay, in this hypothetical world, obviously using an internal critique, is it not logically possible that because they are obeying the covenant, God supernaturally makes it so they do not die from the infection?
I don't think that that's reasonable.
How come?
To say. Well, because we know, like, in the modern day, children die of these infections, and to say that, well, like... To say that thousands of years ago, God made it so that no kid ever died of an infection from this is just, I think that's a little bit too silly, but it also poses this really serious problem that I typically not typically, sometimes run into with the apologetic approach, which is if the God is capable of doing anything, then that means a tentative explanation can be applied to literally any situation. But an explanation that can explain absolutely anything at all explains nothing in particular. So it really loses value, actually, as an explanatory mechanism.
Right. So what I'm saying is not every single person could have possibly had this supernatural experience. I'm saying specifically because God had a covenant and made a promise that he would honor his end of the promise and protect those individuals. A child that's off in another nation gets circumcised for a different reason, may be infected and die. But a child specifically for this covenant may have been protected. Ultimately, I'm not making the argument that's the case. What I'm saying is we don't really have any data one way or the other to make the case that this is happening, that they were dying from infection or it wasn't. But we also have to remember this is an internal critique. So we do have an all-powerful God that's operating here.
I think you have the burden, though, and just to say that it's hypothetically possible, I don't think is a good response.
That's not my response. My response is we have a hypothetical possibility, but my response is we don't have enough data to make a case either way.
We have to make inferences, and I mean we just know that infection's not even that long. I mean, like, even in the United States, 100 years ago, one in every 5 children died before they were 5 years old. And it's almost all because of infections. And so I think it's totally appropriate to apply that to the ancient world as well. I mean, like, we have data on traditional societies, too, that we can look at where those death rates are like 40%.
Sure. So let me just grant it and move the conversation forward. God is responsible for the infection. They do die. Is God not responsible for all death?
It depends on kind of like the view you take on it. I mean, do you think that God caused the 2004 tsunami that killed 250,000 people? Or do you think that plate tectonics did it?
Could be either one.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say is, or do you think God's ultimately responsible for everything, so in a way, God is responsible for it? But then God would be responsible for Satan and evil then at the side. I don't know how you don't arbitrarily or not arbitrarily draw, or how do I want to say this? I don't get why we arbitrarily draw the line at, well, God's not responsible for the existence of Satan and evil. But he is responsible for all this death and stuff that we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't take that stance. I do take that God is responsible.
For evil? God like created evil?
No, God did not create evil. God is responsible for evil. Those are two different things.
So if he's responsible, then doesn't that make him morally culpable?
Yes, which is why he defeats it on the cross.
But wouldn't that make you, in a sense, guilty of the thing in question?
No, I think guilty means you proactively proactively acted upon it. You chose to make it happen. Being responsible is not.
But he created. But he created evil.
No, I didn't say he created evil. I said he's responsible for evil.
Okay. I don't know how you're squaring that. Go ahead.
For example, I can adopt a child. I did not create the child, but I'm now responsible for that child.
Yeah, but I mean, we were talking, but you said he's responsible for evil. So, yes. I mean, I feel like this is the Boston Marathon bombers from like years ago.
No, I don't follow. Like, I know the story, but I don't follow the connection.
I haven't made it yet. I was just asking if you're okay. Like, imagine if they argued in court that the bomb, like, I'm responsible for the bomb, but the bomb is actually what, like, flying shrapnel is what harmed all of those people, not us. I feel like if you're going to say God is responsible for evil, that's the same as those guys are responsible for that terrorist attack, even though by their direct hand, like in a very odd way, they didn't actually harm anybody, but they did. That's
Yeah, so I don't think the analogy follows. I think the analogy more works along the lines of, like, let's say I'm building a device. My device is intended to do X, Y, and Z tasks out in society. I sell that device out in society. It does X, Y, Z in tasks. It's great. But for some reason, one out of my 10 devices randomly explode. I am now responsible for that random explosion that's happened.
Yeah, but you're not perfect. You don't know that that's going to happen, and God mm-hmm. does.
Sure. So then this analogy, if we want to use all knowledge, let's say God granted me all knowledge, right? I'm the creator of the car. I keep forgetting his name, Ford. I forget his first name. Whatever his name, something Ford.
Henry. Anyways, well, he didn't invent the car, but well, yeah, Henry Ford.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Henry Ford popularized the car. I was given all knowledge about cars and what they would do. Through my all knowledge, I know the greater goods. I know the outcomes of creating cars. I know all the potential that's going to come from it. But I also know unnecessarily that people are going to use that car to try to drive and run over people. There is a certain responsibility that I take upon that. I have certain all knowledge, but I don't think I'm under obligation to say stop making those cars.
Could you run that one more time? I'm sorry.
So say, God, I'm Henry Ford. I'm making yep. cars. God gives me foresight of what everything that's going to happen with a car. I know for a fact. Yep. Okay. Now, I see all the great things that are to come. We're going to have trucking. We're going to have industry. We're going to have business. We're going to have people being able to commute. We're going to have people like all these great things that are going to come from it. But I also see unnecessarily that some people are going to use the car to do hit and runs, to run over their ex because they cheated on them, things like that. I think there is some form of responsibility that falls upon me for that. But at the same note, I don't think I'm under an obligation to say cease and desist or to change my plan that I'm moving forward with.
I mean, that's like that sounds like a utilitarian argument. We, like in the United States, like we know for a fact that if we dropped the speed limit by 10 miles per hour, we would reduce the number of fatal accidents that would happen. I'm pretty sure we could say with confidence that that would definitely happen. But people should have a degree of freedom, and people believe in dying for whatever freedom right. they want to express. And it could possibly also, like, it would literally slow down the economy because things would move. So are the potential goods offset by the benefits or whatever? But I really feel like in this scenario, you're not taking on that perspective that you are perfect and you do have foreknowledge and you do know how to do it without 10% of your cars randomly exploding or whatever. 10% would be way too high of a number, but
right. And that the argument that I'm making is that we have better goods that come from these possibilities of evil than we would have had if these possibilities of evil didn't exist in the first place. I as a Christian, I go to this parable of wheat and the tares, says that an evil man came in the middle of the night, planted tares amongst the wheat. The farmer says, the hands to the farmer say, should we go rip out the tares? The farmer says, no, don't do it yet, because if you do that, we're going to lose some of the wheat. Let it all grow to come to fruition. At the end, we're going to separate the wheat and the tares. We'll throw the tares into the flames and we'll harvest the wheat, right? The parable tells us, right, that there is evil. There's terrible things that are going on. If we go remove it now, we're going to lose some of the good that we're potentially looking for. But at the end, all the evil will be defeated.
So you're saying you think that there's more good that happens in the world because evil is allowed to exist?
Because the potential of evil can exist. So, for example, we cannot have like the potential of self-sacrifice without the potential of death.
Yeah, it's just that 10 times out of 10, I would prefer that there was no need for anybody to sacrifice themselves. I mean,
that's a utilitarian view, though.
I don't think that's a utilitarian view. I think the utilitarian view would be the fact that the person did sacrifice themselves, it became a national story and it increased everybody's sense of like community ship and blah, blah, blah. And we were all like 9/11 brought this country together. I mean, for like a few weeks, I guess.
What I'm saying is you're making the argument that, without reaching these higher potentials of good, you'd rather just have like a middle level of good. So it's just the maximum amount of pleasure, maximum amount of joy, suffering. I don't think you would argue that a selfless love is on equal level to just like a common love. I think you intuitively speaking, you'd say a selfless love is greater than like a common love.
Yeah, but there's no victim in a selfless love.
Well, so you can't have selfless love without the possibility of like victim. For example, like I can't selflessly act upon somebody without sacrificing something for myself for it to be truly selfless.
I guess in a way that sounds more like compromise than dealing with like actual like evil existing in the world or suffering or whatever. I think I had a thought just now and then you made me forget it. Something I was going to say about this. I'm probably not going to be able to remember it.
Can I just say, really appreciate the way you're an interlocutor at the moment, the way you're having a conversation now. It's far greater than we've had conversations in the past. And I just want to say thank you for that.
As far as problem of evil stuff, that's all I have. I mean, it would be cool. I can come up some other time and we can talk about like, I think the fine tuning argument's a really bad argument for a lot of reasons. I think the
fine tuning argument is a complementary argument. I don't use it as a whole argument. I use it as like an addition to say the contingency argument. So the contingency argument with conjunction of the fine tuning, I think, is a better argument than the fine tuning. So we can talk about that if you want next time.
Yes, a contingency argument. You're just saying that God is a necessary being because God couldn't be any other way.
Yeah. So it goes to like necessary being, and then we have contingent beings, which would be like me and you. Go back far enough, and then we have to ask the question. You know, what's the first mover? And then we get into all sorts of problems, like the problem of like ad hoc limits and things like that. And then we can go into the fine tuning and why ad hoc limits don't really work.